Welcome to Stockhouse.com's Fireside Chat, where you get the lowdown on the sectors, the companies, and the trends shaping your investment dollar.
Hi, this is Galen Engen, tech correspondent for Stockhouse.com. I'm sitting here with Lee Buckler, the VP of Business and Corporate Development of Replicell Life Sciences, which is currently trading on the TSX Venture Exchange under the ticker RP. It's a clinical stage biopharmaceutical firm pushing to bring disruptively innovative products to market to treat conditions which are tied to a deficit of functioning cells by injecting new cells designed to get the job done. Now, this includes the massive hair loss treatment sector, which generated $4 billion in revenue in the United States alone in 2015. So with its groundbreaking treatment methodologies for chronic tendinosis, aging, and sun-damaged skin, and pattern baldness, wow, that's a lot of stuff, now all in clinical testing, Replicell is on the cusp of the rubber hitting a potentially lucrative road. Now, combine that with a proprietary, patented, and industry-leading next-generation dermal injection delivery device, designed to bring specific value to all dermal injections, including the $2 billion dermal filler market. And Replicell has a very real opportunity to realize its blue sky potential in a multiple of treatment verticals. So here we are. I would like to discuss to get a better look under the Replicell's hood and its potential to blow the doors off its current valuation. First off, how you doing, Lee? Thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, thanks a lot, Galen. That was that was a great introduction. I'm going to go buy stock right now.
Okay, so first off, what I'd like to do is to perhaps have Lee, you describe how Replicell is a different kind of biotech company than people might think when they think biotech.
Sure, absolutely. So thanks a lot for the opportunity, Galen, to give an update to the listeners. So, you know, first of all, I mean, you know, Replicell is a biotech company in many traditional senses of the word. We're creating products that are regulated by regulatory authorities that treat people for conditions that aren't otherwise necessarily adequately treatable by current technologies. But we're different in a couple of meaningful ways from what people might be accustomed to when they think of biotech. One is cells instead of other kinds of biologics. And we're using, in fact, the patient's cells to create products to treat those same patients. And so what that means from a technical and practical point of view is that the products that we're developing have a remarkably high safety profile. So I don't have to get up in the morning worried about whether or not I've killed someone overnight with my, you know, with one of my products, which is fabulous. But it also means that the design of the trials and the speed and the size of the trials is significantly different because of the remarkably high safety profile of what we're doing. The big question is, does it work, right? So the second, I think, really distinct thing that's not necessarily unique about Replicell versus some other biotechs is that it's a very committed business model to early stage R&D and licensing. So we simply do not aspire to build a company that takes products to market. We just think that is that the most shareholder value creation that we can do is in that early discovery to mid-stage clinical point where you've discovered a product, you've got some early clinical data, you've got proof of concept, proof of principle on that you've got something that's safe and you've got early indication that you've got a signal that it works. And then you partner that with companies much bigger than yourselves that have a proven track record in late stage development and commercialization and sales and distribution of products into the markets that we're looking to target. And then, you know, we have a co-development and licensing relationship with them. So, you know, the proof of principle there is the deal that we've got with Shiseido already on one of our products, which we'll talk about in a minute. But that's our intent, develop all these assets through to a certain point where we then license them to companies for upfront fees, upfront licensing fee, development milestones, commercial milestones, and royalty checks. And then the other way that we're different, and this is the last way, is that although we're a biotech company creating biologics to treat people for multiple different conditions, we also have a proprietary injector device that in some ways is could be the cart in front of the horse here, because the device we anticipate to be ready to be sold on the market in Europe next year. And we're very excited about bringing value to dermal injections through that device and getting that in the hands of a licensed partner.
Perfect. Now, talking about these dermal injections, Do you want to describe briefly what the Replicell's treatment pipeline is and what makes those treatments unique?
Yeah, absolutely. So we derive all of our biologics from a single stitch biopsy taken from the back of the patient's head. In that biopsy tissue, there are two cell populations that we develop into products. The one cell population is a population that we, and in both instances, we isolate the cells, we grow more of them, we freeze them in vials, we give them back to the clinic for reinjection into the patient. We don't modify the cells, we don't do anything crazy to the cells, we simply grow more of what of a cell population that we think we understand what it does, and we deliver that locally into the patient, not systemically, but just locally to have a local effect. So the one cell population is, we believe, the cell population that is ultimately going to be responsible for regenerating hair growth in those people who have thinning hair as a result of androgenic alopecia, fancy name for pattern baldness. Mm-hmm. The other cell population is a cell population that's highly expressive of a bunch of proteins, but most importantly, type 1 collagen. And so these cells we're putting into areas of patients where type 1 collagen can affect repair in a way that their own cells are not doing it. And namely, we are in the clinic already with that cell, the product, in chronic tendon injury, because 80% of the dry weight of your tendon is comprised of long linear strands of type 1 collagen, and when those are broken and they don't heal, you've got a tendon that is painful and you've got a loss of function. Mm-hmm. And the other product that we are in clinical development already for with that cell population is actually to create a natural dermal filler. So, you know, as you age, the springs under the mattress, if you will, of your skin, the extracellular matrix under your skin, thins. And that's what causes your skin to sag and wrinkle and look less plump, right, than when mm-hmm. you're young. And right now, there's a $2 billion market in the U.S. alone of basically artificially filling that gap with, you know, things like hyaluronic acid or collagen injections that last only a brief period of time because they're artificially filling that space. And it dissipates and you haven't actually reconstructed that extracellular matrix. We believe, and this is what we're in clinical testing of, is that we can inject these cells, which are highly expressive of type 1 collagen, and it can actually rebuild that extracellular matrix. So we're rebuilding that layer under the skin, which once again makes it look plump and significantly less wrinkly. And that's what we believe will have measurable results, about, at the end of this trial next year.
So very interesting. The whole pipeline itself, to a certain extent, offers a fairly disruptive opportunity or option for those people that are currently taking treatments for these particular types of maladies, correct?
Absolutely.
Wow, that's amazing. Now, we've already touched, both of us, on the fact that the Replicell has this revolutionary dermal injector, and it's also an industry-leading device. Now, could you please describe this device to the average investor like me and just tell me what makes it so disruptive?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you look at the $2 billion in the U.S. alone, like I said, of hyaluronic acid, for instance, that's injected into people's, largely into people's faces now, to make them look younger, the injection methodologies haven't evolved as fast as the injectable, right? The thing you're injecting. And so if you look at the process of those injections now, there's typically it's a single needle typically. It's all the injectors out there on the market today are still driven by the thumb of the person behind the injector, if you will. There's a lot of clinical art in the injection process itself. And fundamentally, we came to believe that if you can't control the delivery of what you're trying to get into the patient, you can't control the outcome. And so that's why you see today in the cosmetic market such variability of results. You know, you see some people, you know, as I say, as I joke sometimes poorly, perhaps a lot of times you see, you know, too many duck lips out there, right? And that's because, you know, people, it's hard to estimate what's the right amount of injectable. And mm-hmm. so what we have developed with this injection device is a device that you can control the depth and the dose of the delivery. And if you can control the depth and dose and take the art out of the injection and make it more robust, then you can control the results. with number one, that's very exciting. So we think we can make much more, we can have much more reproducible results of anything that's being injected into the skin, not just our products, but that including the $2 billion of hyaluronic acid that's being injected into people's faces in the U.S. alone today. Number two, if you look at those dermal injections, typically they're preceded by the injection of local anesthetic. Now, that's just a lot more needles. And actually, the injection of local anesthetic into the skin really hurts. It's painful, and it's little injections, and it only hurts for a fraction of a second, but it makes the whole experience quite unpleasant. What we've done is we've embedded what's called a Pelche element into our injector that essentially obviates the need for these local anesthetic shots, because you touch the injector or this element to the patient's skin, it freezes the immediate area, the needles penetrate the skin when it's numbed and injects the injectable as the needles are tracked back out again. And so you make the patient experience much more pleasant. You bring much more consistency to the clinical results, the aesthetic results, and you minimize the amount of procedure time taken for each of the procedures, which is important to the doc.
That's that sounds like it's going to actually turn the world on its ear as far as like the injectable devices are concerned. Really,
we're very excited about the potential. And then the last benefit that I didn't even get to, because we hadn't actually intended this, is that because we can do very shallow injections and we can control the depth of the dose of the delivery, we think we can actually facilitate the injection of hyaluronic acid for fine wrinkles across the expanse of the cheeks or across the expanse of the upper chest cleavage kind of area, which is currently not addressable. You can't inject hyaluronic acid effectively with current injection technologies for those kinds of wrinkles across, for the fine wrinkles that often appear across, wide expanses. So we also think that we can expand the current market for the current injectables as well, which is, when you put that all together, it's a very exciting opportunity.
Sounds like it. Now that we've talked about all this, why don't you tell me then where Repricel sits in terms of what's its clinical trials for the treatments and the dermal injector itself?
Absolutely. So I'll start with the injector because we just covered that. That has been design locked, and we're building the functioning prototypes now. Those functioning prototypes will be used for validation testing. All of the data on the validation testing of that device will be used to prepare a submission to the European regulators, and we go to Europe first. Almost the entire device industry goes to Europe first because the regulatory pathway is just so much more rational in Europe than it is anywhere else. So we'll submit to the regulators an application to sell that device for the use of the injection of hyaluronic acid. We anticipate that we will receive that CE mark, which is permission to sell the device, on the market in Europe next year. And if we're doing our business development job at all on the business development side of the equation, we'll have a deal with a company that wants exclusive access to that device to sell into Europe and perhaps globally next year as well. So that's where we're at on the device. All the three other products for the androgenic alopecia, the chronic tendinosis, and the dermatology are all in clinical development. So we've finished a phase one trial in androgenic alopecia. We're poised to start two clinical trials on that next year. Shiseido will launch their trial. I know we haven't touched on the Shiseido partnership, but they're our partner on this product in Asia. They will launch their trial of that product in Japan first half next year, and we will submit our application to the German regulators to do a companion trial of that product in Germany next year as well. So that is sort of phase two. And the dermatology trial is now solidly enrolling patients in a phase one trial in Germany. And the tendon trial is a phase one slash two in Canada, currently enrolling and treating patients. Both of those, the dermatology and tendon trials, we expect to read data late next year.
All of this sounds great. Now, can you tell us then, because you briefly talked about it just momentarily there, how the partnership with Shiseido? It's like a 140-year-old company. It's been around for ages in Japan. How is this impacting Repricel and its ability to commercialize its pipeline?
Well, first, first of all, we're very pleased with the relationship, and it's also proof of principle of our whole business model, right? So, you know, after the phase one data came out on what we call RCH01, which is our product for the treatment of androgenic alopecia, we, long story short, ended up doing a deal with Shiseido, the third or fourth largest cosmetic company in the world, as you say. I'm headquartered in Japan with a tremendous corporate interest in technologies for treating pattern baldness. That partnership has been a great partnership. We've done some great development work on that asset, and now they are ready to go on the next phase clinical trial in Japan. So we signed the deal in 2013. It was an exclusive license for that product in most of Asia. The deal was described as a $35 million deal, $4 million up front, $31 million in milestone payments, and sales royalties for the life of the product in Japan. So that's very important for a small company like ours. What's even perhaps more important is Shiseido's financial commitment to the development of the product. So they are funding all the manufacturing in their markets, all of the clinical trials in their markets, all the regulatory approvals in their markets, and all the sales, marketing, and distribution in their markets. So, you know, it's just as important for us to protect money going out of our pockets as it is to get money coming in. So that's a tremendous financial commitment. They've now completed the technology transfer, the manufacturing transfer of that product from our manufacturing facility in Europe to Kobe, Japan. That facility has been certified by the regulators. The manufacturing protocols, the validations, testing, all been completed. They've got the physicians trained. They're ready to roll with one last approval from an oversight committee from the regulators there. They're ready to roll on this trial in Japan, and we're very excited about that. And we're also excited because Japan, in November of last year, rewrote the whole rules around how cell therapies like this are being regulated, and long story short, have made Japan now the most exciting jurisdiction to be developing and commercializing cell-based therapies, because you can now get a product on the market potentially in Japan faster than any other regulated country in the world. Mm-hmm. So this makes Japan a really exciting place for us, not only because of our relationship with Shiseido, which, you know, we can leverage these new rules for, but also to do other licensing deals for other companies, with other companies for our other products in Japan as well.
Now, let's back up here for a second and talk about money. You guys just announced a $2 million private placement. Now, how far do you expect this cash to take you? You know, and what are you guys going to use the funds for?
Absolutely. So, you know, we will, you know, our whole mission in life is to try and keep Replicell, the company, as virtual and as lean as possible. So we use contract manufacturers, contract research labs, consultants, contractors. Our headcount is actually very small. So we really try and pour the vast majority of our shareholder money into, you know, all these programs that I just described, which, mm-hmm. you know, admittedly is a lot going on for a very small company like ours. But we're excited about the diversification it represents, and yet the synergy of the expertise that we're using. What we want this financing to get us through to, Galen, is data and the next deal, right? So, mm-hmm. you know, one of the things, Shiseido, the $4 million upfront that we got from Shiseido in 2013 carried the company for a fair amount of time. And that's great capital for us to be able to use. It's non-dilutive, right? It's non-dilutive of shareholder equity. You get the validation of a partnership. So we're really pushing hard to use this private placement raise. And, you know, we've got appetites for, you know, for more than two if we can execute on two. And we're, you know, we're encouraged by the way this financing is going. We're to use this financing to get us through to data and a deal where we can really be looking at future financings at a different valuation.
Speaking of timelines, what kind of milestones do you think investors can expect over the next 12 months?
You know, I joined this company a year ago, and one of the things that I saw was what we're sitting, the point we're sitting at right now. So I described 2015 as the pivot year, where we pivoted all of our assets into the next phase of clinical development. And then set 2016 up as what I call the transformative year. So, you know, we've got more catalysts and meaningful milestones that, you know, could have a significant impact on valuation in the next 18 months than we've had probably in the past 36. So, you know, what we will see, what we anticipate seeing next year is data from our chronic tendinopathy trial. That's of the ankle. Data from our dermatology trial. Approval to sell the device in Europe. All of those we believe are licensable events. So if I can do a deal on any one, let alone two or three of those events, you know, that significantly affects not only the partnership structure of the company and the validation and credibility that that represents, but also the financial situation of the company.
Nice, bringing cash flow in. That's always a good thing for investors to hear.
Right, absolutely.
Now, you guys have been getting a lot of attention for a myriad of reasons, but more specifically, you've just been recently picked as the Canadian Innovation Exchange Public Top 20 company, or a part of that list. Now, you're going to be presenting at the upcoming CIX Public Investor Day on November 18th, 2015, in the Mars District in Toronto, Ontario. Do you want to give me your thoughts on how you guys feel about this and how you plan to use the opportunity?
So first of all, it's a great honor. Anytime you get, you know, sort of external validation of the excitement of what we're doing is tremendous. Obviously for us to be selected is a huge honor. We're very proud of it. We at the moment, I think, the only biotech company in the list, so we're very proud of that. There's a lot of great science happening in Canada. And we think it's a great opportunity to get our story out in front of investors and funds and partners to tell the story, you know, in Canada, which is, you know, we're always very pleased and honored to do. So when we got news of the selection, obviously there was you know, a little dance party, but you know, the only thing that matters is that we deliver value to shareholders here at the end of the day. But these kind of third party accolades along the way are you know, mean a lot when you're working this hard.
Absolutely. Now, so if you happen to be in the Toronto area on that day and are able to register, go on down, take a look. I think Repucel is a very interesting offering. There are other companies, of course, up to be discussed, and I think the whole day will be very interesting. But, yeah, you should go out and check it out. Now, I just wanted to say here that, you know, I wanted to thank you, Lee, for coming out and discussing stuff with today. And for listeners, again, this is Lee Buckler that I've been speaking to, VP Business and Corporate Development of Repucel Life Sciences. And I'm, of course, Galen from stockhouse.com. Repucel is currently trading on the TSX Venture Exchange under the ticker RP. And, again, Lee, thank you very much for spending time with me today.
Absolutely. Thanks, Galen. Thanks to you and thanks to Stockhouse for continuing to follow the story. We appreciate the coverage. Appreciate your thoughtful and always excited coverage of what we're doing. We appreciate it. And anytime, any place, anywhere investors want to chat, please let them know. I'm happy to chat with them and hope they get along for the ride.
Perfect. Thank you very much, Lee.
Thanks a lot, Galen.
You betcha. Take care.